Internet Talk Radio, Flame of the Internet.
We're here with Glenn Kowak, who's chief executive of EUnet. Glenn, I'd like to welcome you to Geek of the Week.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Happy to be here.
Great. EUnet. In the United States, we have something called UUnet, which is a large commercial TCP/IP and UUCP service provider. Is EUnet the same thing, or is it a different type of service?
Well, first of all, we have an E in place of a U, so there's at least a fundamental difference there. No, we are very similar in our origins and in the sorts of services we have, and in some sense in our geographical coverage, but the circumstances in Europe in terms of political and geographical boundaries are really quite different from the circumstances in the States. Briefly put, we are essentially commercial provider of internet-related services in the European region, quite similar to the sorts of things you see in UUnet and the regionals in the United States, although in terms of geographical coverage, we would be a very large regional indeed.
How many countries do your networks span?
Today we say about 23.
And you operate networks in every one of those countries?
Yes, we do, although in varying degrees of sophistication due to the varying technical circumstances in Europe. As you might imagine, a network in the Netherlands is going to be much more sophisticated than a network that's just starting up in, for instance, Poland or the Ukraine.
And you have networks in countries like Poland and the Ukraine.
I picked Poland and the Ukraine because they're two places, in one case Poland, where we've been trying to establish a network and having some difficulty. The Ukraine is a place where we have some overtures going out where we're trying to develop those. Both countries have daunting problems because of their local infrastructure, lack of technical sophistication broadly throughout the population, and then just sort of distance from, let's say, Western telecommunications connectivity and traditions. We do pride ourselves, though, in having a lot of connectivity to Eastern Europe. In fact, EUnet in the late 80s and early 90s was one of the first networks to get into Czechoslovakia, Hungary, the Soviet Union, as it was known in those days, and the former Yugoslavia as well.
Now, you tend to structure your activities around a national Unix users group. Can you tell me a bit about how that gets set up? Let's say we're in some new country, Fredonia, and we wish to join the Internet. How does that work?
Fredonia is an excellent choice because the Marx Brothers, well, never mind, I'll get into that later. The typical circumstances through which we start a national network are, well, let me do a little bit of history. I hope this isn't too long. EUnet was started around 1982 under the umbrella of the European Unix User Group, now known as Europen. In 1982, we would have conferences of people around Europe from different institutes, all of whom were Unix enthusiasts. These people were aware of what was going on in the United States with the Usenet and the UUCPNet, started by people like Tom Truscott and others in Research Triangle Park in North Carolina in the States. And these people got together at one of these meetings and they said, well, look, we've got local data traversing our local networks, we've got some national activity, but right now there's no interconnection model inside Europe, and we need one. So they very informally agreed to just start connecting each other, and it took off like wildfire. One of the ways that we're very distinct from U.S. networking is that, in some sense, EUnet and most of the rest of Europe started out with regionals and is today realizing an NSFNet equivalent. In EUnet's case, we had sort of very loose institutional national networks. They started coming together to interchange traffic in the way that I mentioned a minute ago. And it has blossomed since then. From roughly 1982, a little bit later, until more or less today, we have operated under the umbrella of the Europen Group, which again is its modern manifestation of the European Unix User Group. In order to make our operations work on a national level, we have an affiliation between a local Unix user group and the networking group that started out. In essence, we allow ourselves to be started by a user group. That ensures that we are watching out for our users, for their requirements, and being sensible about how we provide our services. So when we want to start a network in another country, typically what we do is we ask them to come together and start a Europen group. Now, that usually requires some sort of Unix enthusiasm, but in fact that's evolved in recent years to an enthusiasm towards open systems, which is nearly synonymous with open networking now. And as that group develops, we work with technical people associated with that group to start some kind of local group. And once that group is identified, we immediately start to exchange traffic with them, usually by UUCP, which works quite well over the low-grade phone lines that we've seen in recent years in Eastern and Central Europe. And then as time goes on, as the group becomes more cohesive, identifies itself as being able a group that can deliver services, starts bringing in some funding, then slowly we move to more sophisticated services, IP, possibly over dial-up, eventually over leased lines. And
so you have national networks that actually have leased lines in place.
In fact, today we have, I believe, 11 national networks that are connecting to the Amsterdam European Network Operations Center for EUNET with leased lines. And the vast majority of those are 64 kilobits. A few are at 128, notably Germany.
That's a fairly decent-sized operation. These are not cheap lines in Europe.
No, they're extremely expensive. Probably, what do you think the benchmark is? Maybe a factor of three times more expensive for leased lines in Europe, in your experience?
Well, that sounds like a good benchmark.
Yeah, I would say so. And transatlantic lines are the same. We have today a 256 kilobit line that's just being installed, upgrading from our 128K line. And it is unfortunate that European telecommunications policy, dominated by the PTTs in nearly every country, has imposed a hidden tax on its population. Now, admittedly, there are complex questions regarding universal voice phone service, so that saying that it's purely a tax is perhaps a little bit harsh. But I've been now doing this for a few years and feel like a little harshness is appropriate. The lines are just so expensive, and it's holding back European networking so much. It's really sad. And then there are terms and conditions that the PTTs impose on one, like in some countries, Ireland, you need to order a leased line and pay for it 1 year in advance. In other countries, there are draconian termination clauses, including the Netherlands. It makes network operations very difficult, but then again, that provides for a niche for EUNET, because we pride ourselves in finding ways to get things done in spite of the impediments.
Now, your users pay for their services. You don't get any government subsidies?
Well, we never get any subsidies. We do have some grants coming in. Some of our people in, for instance, Ireland and Denmark are working in the CEC Value Project or Value Program. But those are for specific implementations of a service, which is then being purchased by the providing organization. No, we really stand on our own economic feet. We don't receive any subsidies. We don't receive any major grants on a continuing basis. We are dependent upon operating ourselves as a viable economic unit. And frankly, I like it that way. As Pete Bierdema has said, Pete Bierdema is one of the long-term leading lights of EUNET, having been involved since the early 80s. He's our head of operations today. And Pete has always done a very excellent and insightful job of encouraging people to never distort their cost economics through grants. It may seem like a contradiction, and it may seem perhaps like an imposition on a user, but in fact, if you're starting a network which has a subscription cost which does not reflect the actual cost, then at some time in the future, you're going to have to charge those costs. And that's a square wave insertion of a new price, and that can destroy networks. And in fact, that's one of the things that has made some of the networks in Europe have a very, very difficult time. They get subsidies for a long time, and they watch the cliff coming, the cliff of when those subsidies change or end, and, well, they're not sure they can bridge the gap. It's a tough situation. One of the things that our economic model forces EUNET to do, which I think is very interesting and good for us, is it forces us to smooth out our price and cost curve whenever possible. In other words, instead of having a fetish of 2 megabit infrastructures or 34 megabit infrastructures that you see in a lot of networking around the world, and I think particularly in Europe, as in, let's build a big net before we have any net at all, what EUNET has said across the length and breadth of the European region is, let's do any networking we can, let's bring in money, and as demand grows and as funds accumulate, let's go to the next step. We have very low overhead. We put most of our money back into the technology. And if our European-level organization has any surpluses, we grant money back to the different national networks so that they can grow faster and get the networking going. We think that EUNET is proof that one can succeed in, how should I say, self-built infrastructure. It doesn't require terrible government intervention. And in fact, in some ways, it does better without it.
You're listening to Geek of the Week. Support for this program is provided by O'Reilly & Associates. recognized worldwide for definitive books on the Internet, Unix, the X-Window system, and other technical topics. Additional support for Geek of the Week comes from Sun Microsystems. Sun, the network is the computer.